Welcome back. Bless Your Boys Podcast, bringing you the week in baseball news from a Detroit Tigers perspective. BlessYouBoys.com is your home for all things Detroit Tigers baseball on the SB Nation platform. Let us get the show on the road. Welcome back, everyone. This is the Bless Your Boys Podcast. We've got a special guest for you tonight. We've got Alex Fast, who's vice president of The Pitcher List, one of my favorite sites, which is devoted mainly to pitching and fantasy baseball. Alex, how are we doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me. You guys do fantastic work over there at Bless You Boys as well, and it's, I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, no problem. Very, very glad to have you in. It was kind of a fun day for Tigers fans. We liked spring training quite a bit, you know, watching guys hit home runs. We missed that during the regular season.
Oh, man, between Demerit and Mickey going back-to-back twice and then literally having every major prospect pitch for you, not necessarily effectively, but that's kind of exciting.
Yeah, we were missing Tarik Skubal, and that was about it. So, yeah, it was that's about as good as it gets these days. So, yeah. can you tell me a little bit before we get started? I just kind of want to talk about the pitcher list, like where you guys kind of got the idea for it and kind of what the goal is and you know, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, sure. So Pitcherless started a few years ago, maybe 4 or 5 years ago. Nick Pollock, he's the creator, CEO, founder. He started a few years ago when it was just pitcher gifts, and it was just a bunch of gifts of pitchers. And then it's just kind of grown exponentially over the past couple of years. Nick took me on probably 4 years ago. I just reached out to him based on a Reddit post, and we kind of clicked, and we were both in New York City. We're both in Brooklyn. And we met up and I said, well, I'd like to, you know, would you ever think about starting a podcast? And he said, sure. So we started a podcast together. And yeah, we kind of mostly started out with pitching. And then it kind of grew from there. And we just launched Pitcherlist 5.0 over at pitcherlist.com, which has really kind of, we're trying to give you as much content as we could possibly give you about every single format that you can think of, dynasty stuff, 12 teamers, 15 teamers, roto. We're trying to do a little bit better with points league stuff. Nick releases top 100 pitchers every single week. I'm releasing top 100 pitchers maybe once a month. We have a podcast called On the Corner that we do every Tuesday where we're exclusively talking about pitching, but we also have one called On the Barrel where we exclusively talk about hitting. If people are interested too, they can always join, become a PL Plus member, and you get like access to our Discord and we can help you with your drafts and stuff like that. But yeah, mostly like what we want to be is just a site that is for all kinds of different people. People who are just breaking into fantasy baseball. We have a whole fantasy 101 series so you can learn about it. And then the people who are on, you know, Baseball Savant every single day talking about ex-WOBA and WoBacon and stuff like that. The biggest thing for me is just like I want people to feel safe to ask any question that they can. Like, you know what I mean? There's so many new metrics out there and I feel like so many baseball fans kind of feel like a little left behind, and we want to have like a very safe place where people can talk about those things.
I love it. Yeah, and I mean, I think sometimes like when a site promotes itself as like having, you know, a fantasy orientation too, sometimes people that'll put regular baseball fans off. And I'd also like to just make the point that nobody needs to be playing any fantasy to get tons out of the site. Like, you guys have so many good writers there now, the variety of content, including the podcasts, you know, the giffage that you guys produce, all that stuff has been fantastic. So yeah, it's a big resource for a lot of us. I know who are writing about anything in baseball, not just about pitchers or my kind of main obsession with the game, which is definitely pitching.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you saying that because it really kind of makes us feel really good to hear you say stuff like that. So we appreciate it.
Oh, sure thing. And yeah, it is nice to kind of have a spot where people feel like they can ask these questions without looking stupid, because unfortunately, you know, Twitter can turn into fights, and you say something you didn't mean to say, or you don't know something, and you can just get reamed over the coals by a whole bunch of random people. So yeah, it's a little bit competitive out there sometimes.
Totally.
So yes, it's nice to just be able to learn from a place.
100%. Yeah, that's what we're all about. We're not like, we're kind of like the anti hot takes site. We're not really into that. We're into like, hey, let's just all learn about these guys together and see what's interesting and what's not.
Yeah, and I really like the kind of rolling top 100 lists. That's just a cool feature, because if you're, you know, if you can't follow the whole league easily, like just checking on that and seeing why guys are moving up and down and kind of getting an idea will really, really help anybody as they get ready for their fantasy drafts. But yeah, also all through the season. So yes, very cool stuff over there. Yeah, let's just kind of get into the Tigers a little bit. I mean, you know, the pitching staff last year was the high point. They weren't terrible in terms of FIP. I think we ended up at like 4.84 overall as a staff for the year by the various WAR metrics, somewhere just beyond middle-ish. And obviously the bats were terrible. Do you foresee any signs that the pitching staff will be a little bit more solid in general this year?
I do. Especially when it comes to Matthew Boyd, who we are big fans of. You know, we call ourselves Boyd Boys. How silly that is. I'll let you guys decide. I think this year really is kind of more Boyds to men, though, because I think this is the year that he really takes a step forward. He's such an exciting guy to watch. And last year, obviously, his first half, he kind of broke out into the scene. He became not just fantasy relevant, but a pitcher that people were kind of talking about in the industry. And that was really exciting to see, you know, kind of attacking hitters with this fastball up and this slider down, following what we like to call the Blake Snell blueprint.
Yeah.
And this past year, he went to Driveline, and he's going to integrate this changeup that I think is going to be a really big piece for him personally.
Yeah. Yep. I agree. I mean, I've actually been working on a Boyd preview myself, and you know, I think back to when he came to Detroit, you know, and the fact that, you know, of Daniel Norris and Michael Fulmer and Matt Boyd, he was, you know, decidedly the third man out at that point, at least in terms of how people regarded him. You know, he's a big guy. He's got the frame, had decent velocity for a lefty, was more like 91, 92 back then. But even in 2016, you know, that was the year he dropped down to that, you know, much lower angle. Like, if I think back to what he even looked like in 2015, I can barely remember it, because I remember watching him the first couple of outings and just thinking, like, nah, you know, this just isn't going to play. This.
Yeah,
like,
this ain't it. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And to see someone, you know, like every step of the way, like changed his arm angle that radically, like you won't even see guys be willing to make a change that drastic in their career until they're, you know, kind of at their last legs. And that year he had a great changeup. In the summer when they finally called him up, it was just fastball changeup basically the whole way. Didn't have that slider yet, and the changeup was really good, which gives me a lot of confidence that he understands, he's got the feel, and we both know you know, that there aren't too many guys more invested in technology and the modern metrics being used to train pitchers than Matt Boyd is these days.
Yeah, totally. Listen, we were fortunate enough to talk to him a couple days ago or last week at spring training. And for anyone who's listening, you know, they say don't meet your heroes, and that doesn't apply to Matthew Boyd, because he is truly the kindest guy I've ever met. Like, he was just so incredibly genuine and kind. And we had this interview with him that just came out yesterday. And you know, to echo the points that you were just making, you're right. He's very interested in what's going on mechanically with himself. He's very for using technology for working to get his body in a good place. He was talking about his foot placement and, you know, unlocking some velocity as a result of that foot placement. So you love to hear that, right? You love to hear about, and he knows, you know what I mean? He knows that he got beat with that fastball a lot. You know, he said that he lived by the sword and died by the sword last year. He knows what his issues are. And last year we just kept screaming, like, why doesn't he bring that changeup back? Why doesn't he bring that changeup back? But now that he has, first of all, I mean, you probably watched that at bat against DJ LeMahieu a couple days ago where he used that changeup, and I almost like punched Nick in the face. I got so excited. I mean, that thing was gorgeous, because now he's sitting 93-94, although it came down to 92-93 over the course of the game, but then coming in with an 81-mile-an-hour changeup in that exact same spot, low and away, and guys are just flailing at it. If he can do that, man, there's really another level for him that wasn't there last year.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, he was playing like a brilliant game of checkers last year, and if he can add, the changeup, it'll be chess real fast on people. You know, we watched, like, it was like the first 2 months, you know, he'd changed the fastball. He's one of those guys, you know, I like to think of him almost in terms of Trevor Bauer, because Trevor Bauer went through this whole litany of progression and learning almost by himself, you know, before he really even got to the league. And we've kind of gotten to watch Matt Boyd sort of play it out in real time right in front of us with StatCast data. So he's just been, I mean, from that perspective, so much fun to watch as well. But, you know, increased his spin rate last year, which is something that, you know, Trevor Bauer kind of likes to say isn't something that, you know, that guys can really do without, you know, the aid of Pintar or something like that. He's not unequivocal about it, but, you know, to see him do that and to build the velocity in, it's just been, you know, one excellent, you know, development per year, basically. And yeah, coming out in 2018 with that totally rebuilt slider was just eye-popping. So to think, to talk about him in breakout terms now, after what seemed like two major breakouts, you know, prior to this, based on the arm slot and then based on developing that slider, it's just wild. And I totally agree. It couldn't happen to a nicer guy. I mean, you see what he, the project that he has going in Uganda to help the victims of sex trafficking there. And, you know, and just presents himself definitely as a very, you know, very nice guy. And I have no doubt that he is. But he also has, you know, you can kind of feel that hockey player mentality from him on the mound as well. I remember him plunking Miguel Sano in a game with the Twins where there was a little bit of a beanball, you know, war going on. And Miguel Sano came out of the box like he was going to charge the mound. And Matt Boyd walked straight down the mound and basically put his hands out like, come at me, bro.
That's, first of all, I don't think in a million years I would ever do that to Miguel Sano,
no,
of all people. That's terrifying. But it's so funny that you say that too, because like, so when we met him, that's kind of what I was expecting, something a little more gruff. You know what I mean? I know he has that fantastic charity, but I was expecting, you know, something a little different. And then he was like, hey man, how you doing? I was like, I'm good. How are you doing?
Yep. Super friendly, you know, and you know, the other thing too is kind of watching the swag develop, because it's really, you know, sure, just been in the last year. You know, there's the brim of the cap, the way he's got that cut. You know, there's the high, you know, the high socks always now. The swagger has started to be there, and now we've seen him kind of take the, you know, the step into really being kind of a James Shields type like leader in the clubhouse. You know, he took Tarek Skubal and Daniel Norris both the drive line this year. He's obviously been going for years, but has that investment in his team that I just, you know, we've talked a lot about trade value with Matt Boyd, unfortunately, which is kind of the bittersweet side for a Tigers fan going into this year. But there's so many intangibles there, I think, beyond what people, you know, can see just by looking at his statistics, that should make him a very, very valuable piece for someone. And the Tigers don't seem to be real keen on, you know, talking extension at this point. So I'm assuming something like that's going to go down. But yeah, I mean, it's just fascinating to watch someone evolve that much, and then to have it be a guy that, yeah, you can really cheer for has just been fantastic.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I mean, you know, what's fascinating too then is like, everyone's saying, well, I hope the Yankees get him. I don't know what that, you know, this is, you know, more narrative based as opposed to statistically based, but you know, that's a totally different market, right, in terms of media.
Yeah.
And I don't know what he would be like in that kind of market. You know what I mean? Where guys are constantly at him. He just doesn't seem like the kind of dude who would, you know, he almost seems like a Sonny Gray guy where he's like, I don't really want to be dealing with this kind of, you know, insane media or like Zach Greinke. So I'm hoping if he does get moved, that it's to a place where he can still continue to thrive, where he's not being hounded by the media. Overall, yeah, I'm hoping, you know, he doesn't get moved at all, because, you know, it's fun to watch him pitch there, and I don't want to see Tigers fans any sadder than they may be already.
Yeah, and you know, as a fly ball pitcher too, you know, who's really only problem in the three true outcomes sense is home runs, he's really in a great spot too. You know, we've thought in the past about, you know, what would have happened if Verlander went to the Yankees in 2017 rather than to Houston. And I don't know that it would have gone, you know, quite as well as it has, just because of that park. So yeah, there's that, you know, that kind of a fit as well, which doesn't seem great in New York. So yeah, I mean, I think I've made my peace to some degree with the fact that he's going to be traded, but I care about my guys when they go away, and I want them to go somewhere fun. I was really, really happy to see Nick Castellanos go to the Cubs last year and just mash. And have the whole town fall in love with them. That's cool to see.
That was pretty cool. I'm excited to watch him in Cincinnati too. I think he's just going to keep doing exactly what he's doing.
Yep. I think this is 30 home run territory for him this year.
Yeah, I agree.
Do you think there's any chance Boyd is a serious Cy Young contender then?
Man, that's tough. I probably not, if I'm being honest, just because of, I think, that defense behind him too. I remember in that first appearance, I saw guys drop in foul balls. I saw a guy misplace a ball in center field. So I think that's going to continue to plague him. He would have to, like, that changeup would have to be dominant, and then that curveball would have to be a little bit more than a show me curveball right now. Yeah. In order for him to hit that level. So, I mean, I would have to see what the odds are in Vegas before I definitively said no. You know, there could be something where I'm a little bit interested in it, but a lot would have to come together, and there would have to be a big jump defensively, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I think if you can get, you know, I don't even know what odds these would be, but if you could get huge odds on him, he might not be a bad like long shot guy to throw $5 on, something like that.
Sure.
But yeah, and then there's also the usage issue. You just don't know that the Tigers are going to let him go, you know, 7-8 innings very often. Not that you have to throw 200 innings to win the Cy Young, as Blake Snell proved, but it still helps. It still helps to have those big totals racked up alongside your name, for sure.
Totally.
Yeah. You know, and the other thing about him, too, is he's just been really durable, too. I don't think Matt Boyd has ever had any reported injury of any sort, which may be a testament to just his obsession with conditioning and all the other kind of somewhat more woo-hoo methodology he has going on there.
Sure. Yeah, well, he seems like he thinks about it, you know, because he was talking about pronation and supination, yeah, and, you know, landing the right way. So I think that, you know, obviously sometimes that doesn't matter. A guy has a bad body, but I think between those two things, hopefully he continues to stay healthy.
Yeah. Yep. For sure. And you know, sometimes you just don't know when a guy starts adding velocity. Like sometimes that's a good sign. I mean, usually it's a good sign, but sometimes it's also a bad sign. So yeah, we'll just have to kind of take it as it goes there.
Totally. Tyler Beattie just added some velocity, and look at him. He had that flexor, that UCL flexor strain, and it's like, you're right. It's a little scary. You're right.
Yeah, I remember a couple years ago, Drew Smyly in the last World Baseball Classic was all of a sudden throwing 96, 97, and I was like, whoa, I'm going to be sad that, you know, Drew Smyly is gone. And then, yeah, of course, litany of injuries immediately afterward for 2 years.
Totally.
Yeah, you know, it was really interesting just hearing Boyd talking about, yeah, like, the landing points and how they might affect his release, like, to that degree of specificity, like, landing too much on your heel versus too much on the ball. Yeah, it just seems like he's just super invested in the details to a degree that most guys I've, you know, you hear from aren't.
Yeah, which is like, you know, which is exciting and scary, right? Because it's exciting because he obviously wants to improve. But I guess also exciting because it doesn't look like he takes all of that onto the field with him necessarily. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's where it could be scary. You know, like a guy like Bauer is obviously pretty cerebral, you know, and he, you know, if he gets frustrated, he's going to throw a ball over the center field wall. Whereas, you know, Boyd seems much more composed, right? Much more mature on the mound. So that's good to see.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, with Bauer, you know, like if he gets it in his head that he, you know, he's going to throw this curveball exactly the way he wants to and it gets hit over the fence, he's going to come right back with it a few more times trying to prove something. So, yeah. All right, the next guy on my list here who kind of fits as like Matt Boyd's sort of like little brother now in a way, but Daniel Norris, you know, doesn't have the velocity he used to have, although I've been an advocate all along that, you know, once he got beyond the core issue and got a healthy offseason in him, that there was a decent chance that most of that would come back. But, you know, kind of a similar pitcher, but just not with the same refinement at all that Matt Boyd has. Do you have any hopes for him improving this season?
You know, so I was kind of interested in him last year, and then I know they started utilizing him in that kind of that three innings pitched weird like long opener role, you know what I mean, that was like, I don't know what we would call that, and I was digging a little bit deeper in him today, and he does have some really interesting stuff, because if you're looking just at his fastball, it was very poor last year, right? He threw it, you know, about 50% of the time, 45% of the time. It had a 415 wOBA and is coming in around 90-91, and that's obviously not great. But the command of the pitch is there. He and Boyd actually have identical zone rates on that fastball, but Boyd gets double the swinging strike rate that Norris gets when it's in the zone. So Daniel Norris's swinging strike rate and fastballs in the zone was 6.2%, and for Boyd that was 15.1%. And to me, a big difference with that is I just think Norris isn't able to elevate the four-seamer the way that Boyd is. Boyd was really good at pounding the top of the zone with the fastball and then kind of putting it where he needs to, while Norris kind of had a majority of his leak out towards the middle of the plate, hence I think the higher wOBA on the four-seamers. The good news, though, is I think there is kind of a path to success there for him because he has the secondary pitches. That changeup is great.
Yeah.
He had a 20% swinging strike rate last year. That was top 25 amongst all starters. The slider is a little bit below average in terms of swinging strike rate, but it has some really nice movement to it. He's able to place the pitch where he needs to consistently, which kind of brings me to my next point, that he has all these different locations with his pitches, right? He can beat you down and in with a changeup. He can beat you low and away with a slider. I really wish he would kind of cut out that sinker altogether, maybe pick up the changeup usage instead. But if he can elevate that fastball, then if he can raise the eye level a bit and go north-south a little bit, I don't know. That's kind of interesting to me.
Yeah, yep, I think so too. I mean, they're both trying to do the same thing, especially to right-handers. They're trying to jam them in on the hands and stick it in there. And yeah, it just felt like Boyd is a lot more successful at keeping it out of trouble. Although he still, you know, when he did leave it over the plate, it did seem to get hit hard more often than maybe he even deserved. But yeah, you know, Norris, everything kind of moves for him. Like he, you know, some of the sliders will be flat, and then when he breaks off the really good slider, you're like, oh, you know, that thing is nasty. So yeah, I think there's a chance there for him. Though I think part of the issues with him is still that lower half, though. You know, he just doesn't get down the mound the way he did when we first got him. And I mean, he's only 26, 27. I think it's easy to forget how young he still is if he can kind of get beyond some of the lower half issues. But he doesn't get the same extension that he did back then, and doesn't get on top of the ball sometimes the way he needs to. And those things might all play against the slider, but and maybe against the fastball too, because he's another one who has a really pretty high spin rate compared to his velocity. At least I think he's like, you know, close to 2,400 RPMs, but just doesn't seem to have the efficiency real dialed there, and doesn't get that great, you know, drive down the mound, and probably loses a tick of velocity in terms of its perception as well. So there's issues for him to, you know, to kind of overcome there. But yeah, I've just been hopeful that, yeah, if he can get his legs in shape and kind of repeat his delivery, you know, a little bit more effectively than he has the past few years, that he can use his stuff a little bit, you know, better and start thinking his way through it. Cause there were a lot of outings where he just didn't look like he knew where it was going earlier in the season. And it did seem to help him with the, you know, going three innings and just kind of airing it out. So we'll just have to see, I guess.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think, you know, to your point, I think the Tigers were smart and they saw how hard he was getting hit the second time through the order. And you know, they made that very fitting kind of, I think it was what it was Norris and Verhagen, right? It was that Norris, yep. Verhagen 1-2 punch. Yeah. And that was, you know, effective sometimes. I think, you know, in many ways we kind of saw what the floor is for Norris. Like, I think he has enough there that's kind of the worst it would get for him. And if he can bring that four seamer up and, like you said, maybe tweak those mechanics a little bit, then there is a little bit more for him because the secondary stuff is there.
Yeah. Yep. I tend to agree.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Gary Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from Blue Flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
It was interesting that you mentioned, you know, ditching the sinker, because there's kind of a longstanding problem with the Tigers favoring the sinker for pitchers who probably shouldn't be throwing it anymore. I think of Anibal Sanchez was a classic example where the sinker was just getting pummeled as we entered the whatever, you know, the quote unquote launch angle era. And he just wouldn't go away from it until he went to the Braves. And it's another thing that bites Fulmer a lot. Fulmer's four seamer plays great. The two seamer, they lean on way too often especially when there are guys on base. James McCann would just call the sinker all day. And you know, the Tigers aren't a great defensive club, and yeah, so he wouldn't give up so many home runs off it, but he'd give up a lot of hits. And the guy who, you know, that is going to play for, I think, this year or be an issue with this year is Spencer Turnbull, who's another one who's, mm-hmm. you know, likes to use his sinker, but should probably just be leaning on the four seamer.
Yeah, without a doubt. Yeah, I mean, yeah. But before we go on to him, do you personally feel that the Tigers organization is a particularly stubborn one?
I think the Tigers, yeah, are stubborn and, you know, and they are old fashioned. Like they're trying not to be, but it's sort of like, you know, rather than bringing in, you know, when Dave Dombrowski was fired and they brought in Al Avila, my hope at the time had been that they would, you know, they would go and start plucking guys from some of the more progressive organizations, whether the Dodgers, Rays, Astros, wherever, and they never really did that. So we still are, you know, the key decision makers in the organization are still, you know, a really old school group of guys. You know, you have Dave Littlefield, who was a GM for the Pirates and a former scout. You know, David Chad, kind of a similar background. They're trying hard. Like, they finally have, like, really invested in the technology. They hired Dan Hubbs to kind of run their pitching analytics. I think last summer they hired him, actually, former USC head coach. So they're doing some of the right things, but they are an old school group. And whatever goes on at the player development level, where they do seem to be, you know, making some strides, you know, at the major league level, you still have Rick Anderson, who is, you know, very much a sinker, slider, command, you know, type of old school coach who wants you to get ground balls and go nine innings, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's good to hear. And I brought it up, and we'll get to him later, but I have some opinions on what I think that might mean for Joe Jimenez and the closer role for them. But I don't want to get too far away from the point, because you brought up Spencer Turnbull, who is also, I mean, you know, it's funny. I'm an Orioles fan, right? So I'm used to guys being like, oh, the Orioles, there's no one good on that team, right? and I feel like Tigers fans have to deal with that as well, when in fact there is depth. You know, I think more so maybe for pitching than for hitting. Well, maybe that might not be true. There are some interesting, very interesting names for hitters. But for Turnbull, he's definitely a guy I think people are ignoring a little bit. You know, before that injury, before the, I think it was shoulder fatigue, right?
Yeah. Yep.
He had a 3.31 ERA with a 3.94 FIP. Obviously, the Sierra there, the 4.66 Sierra, is a little bit scary, but I really do think that with a full season under his belt, he can be a low four ERA kind of guy, because the arsenal's there. Like, you obviously know he has the two fastballs that I think he works both sides of the plate really effectively with. I think the sinker finds a few too many barrels. When he misses, it's really just kind of breaking right into a hitter's bat. He has the slider, which is really, really nice, but, you know, so it's tighter, right? It's not like that kind of loopy Matt Boyd slider. The curveball has some nice 12-6 movement to it, also different from Boyd's and Norris's, which is, you know, good to see as well. I'm curious to see what happens with the sinker usage with him. As you very fittingly said, when he was first starting to throw in 2018, it was obviously a much smaller sample size, but we didn't see anywhere near the amount of sinkers that we saw in 2019. If he can amp up the slider usage instead of the sinker, I think there's a path for him to be, like I said, that low four ERA guy. The good news for him, though, is unlike Norris, I think that fastball, or the four-seamer, I should say, is mostly there. You know, the 11% swinging strike rate in the pitch is really good to see. I was looking into it, and it looks like a lot of that was O-swing. A lot of that swing strike rate was outside the zone for his four-seamer, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, because, you know, that mid-90s velocity is going to make it, you know, maybe that sustains.
Yeah, and maybe, you know, maybe you lead guys off more with, you know, with the sinker, try to get it, you know, early outs. It just has always felt like the Tigers would want to do this backwards, where, you know, I would throw sinkers with nobody on base, you know, and then once you're in a little bit of trouble and you need the swing and miss, then just all four seamers. Like, I don't want to see the sinker with people on base. But yeah, the Tigers do sometimes, you know, kind of play that in reverse. The other thing about Spencer Turnbull, the first thing I should mention, I think the thing that's going to be a problem with Spencer Turnbull, and it's one of the reasons why I'm still not sure if maybe I wouldn't like him better as a reliever, is because he's had a history of shoulder fatigue, you know, basically every season, kind of costing him a month, you know, a couple weeks, and then he comes back and he struggles a little bit, and then usually he'll get it going again. But there's kind of been a pattern there. And it feels like, you know, more and more pitchers are getting better at knowing how to, like, condition themselves through something like that, you know, like an issue that kind of keeps popping up like that. It feels like we're getting to the point where there are more concrete solutions. So maybe something can happen there, but it's always in the back of my head that, yeah, he's kind of had that, you know, pattern for a couple years now. The other thing about his four-seamer that I always think is interesting is that he does have a pretty good spin rate on it, but if you look at the vertical movement on it, it's like, you know, I think he gets like 7 to 8 inches of vertical movement, so not really particularly good. And that just always is kind of interesting. Like, you know, pure spin rate, like just the total RPMs, obviously doesn't mean as much as we thought it might when it first, you know, first came on the scene in 2015. But can you think, I mean, are there other guys like that you can think of who, you know, seem to have like that good riding four-seamer when you look at the data, but then when you actually look at the movement, it's just not there. Does that kind of remind you of anyone else? I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, like the first thing that comes up when I think about guys who, yeah, okay. Glasnow's fastball mostly relies on velocity as opposed to movement. So that's kind of like another one. Musgrove, kind of a similar guy too, except far less on velocity. It doesn't really have like the kind of sexiest movement. Maybe even a guy like Corbin Burns too, where like, just doesn't like, I think kind of the big thing there for me, and you know, as StatCast is growing and as Baseball Savant is growing and we're kind of learning about new things, I think the next big thing that people are going to start talking about a little bit more is active spin, right? And for people listening who don't really know, like spin rate is essentially how much it's spinning, but active spin is how much of that spin is contributing to movement, which you really want a high dosage of. So the perfect example is like, I think it's called transverse spin. I could be wrong about that, but I think that's what it's called. Like Rich Hill's curveball, all of his movement, all of his spin contributes to movement, and that's what makes it so absolutely fantastic. It's a bit tangential, but it's also why I'm not as high on guys like Jack Flaherty this year, because I don't think the fastball in terms of movement or in velocity is actually that great, and it just kind of gets lucky every single time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, like the term spin efficiency, you know, kind of gets into it, but active spin actually sounds perfect. But yeah, it can be about the angle you're releasing it, but also like the alignment of the seams, the way it's traveling through air, all that stuff has to factor in. Although it seems like I've never actually gotten to just look at a Rapsodo up close. I don't know if maybe you have, but doesn't it even show that? Like, I think it even has like spin efficiency or spin to movement or something like that on there. So it's all sort of presented for you.
I've only seen photos of the interface, but yes, I believe it does have spin efficiency on there, which is crazy. You know what I mean? Like that's like how far have we come? You know what I mean?
I know. Like that's like amazing. Three, 4 years, you know, this is all just blown up.
Yeah. Like I can't even bend over and put my shoes on without grunting and guys have like Rapsodos. You know what I mean? Like I just feel like this is such a monster.
Oh man. Yep. It's a fascinating time to watch pitching. That's certainly for sure. And yeah. Yeah, Turnbull. Yeah, I don't know. I'm very curious to see Turnbull this year. I'm just interested to see if there were any little changes. He's another one. I know he went to Uganda with Matt Boyd. I know the two of them are boys now too. So it wouldn't surprise me if he's been at Driveline finally working on some of this stuff. But yeah, to go back to the kind of the Tigers and their philosophy, like it was really notable that when they drafted Casey Mize, like one of the first things, you know, one of the first big stories that kept coming out was that Casey Mize was already like, you know, really Auburn, you know, apparently has all the tools and was all dialed with that stuff all along. And he's representative of a whole new class of young pitchers who all expect you to have that technology, expect you to have the fluency in how to use it. And if you don't, you know, you look like a bunch of clowns. Because all the young guys now are you know, primed to all that, and it kind of plays into, you know, playing the game a little bit like a video game in your practice session. You're looking at your results, you know, on the Rapsodo or on the Edutronic cameras, and then you have to take it, you know, to the mound into this real situation, and it's really interesting. And I know I like listening to like John Smoltz try to like reconcile those two approaches is hilarious, because you know you can just tell it would just drive him nuts to think about having all this data in his head when he has to go out there and pitch.
Yeah, it's so funny, because I think he just kind of completely misses the point when he gets so frustrated about it, and it's why I get so frustrated with him, because all they're doing is creating personalized programs. You know what I mean? They have tools to create, like, Daniel Norris and Matthew Boyd are not the same pitcher, so to have a pitching program that treats them like the same pitcher like it would have done in Smoltz's time is counterproductive, right? So all they're trying to do is make you better. You know what I mean? It, like, cracks me up.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, why not customize, you know, if you can? You know, customization is the way of the modern world.
Exactly. Fortnite made $1 billion based off customization alone, I think.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, that's a good example. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, where we're at as an organization is interesting because, yeah, it feels like in the minor leagues, you're hearing a lot more of that talk. Like, Casey Mize, you know, worked on his slurve and made some adjustments to that first off season. And as soon as he came into camp, you started hearing about him and Matt Manning and Alex Fiedo and all those guys kind of getting together. And it almost felt like Casey Mize was sort of giving the tutorial on how to use, you know, the technology and the information. Which, yeah, which just seemed like a bit of a parable for the Tigers organization, unfortunately, to some degree.
Yeah, but you know what? Like, I mean, obviously that stinks. You want it coming from the organization, but they also might have something that I think Ben. I think it's wasn't it Travis Sochik and Ben Lindberg who wrote the MVP machine.
Yeah.
They talk about having a conduit, right? And how difficult it is for organizations to bridge the gap between the analytics nerds and the pitchers, and how pivotal it is to have a guy like Bauer, although he has his own kind of personality, I wouldn't say issues, but a very distinct personality.
Yeah.
So they are kind of lucky to have a guy like Mize who's like already speaks the language of pitching and knows all this kind of quote unquote nerdy analytics stuff. And he could convey that. So that makes me a lot more excited than what I have for the Orioles. I'll tell you that much.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I hear you there. Actually, you know, that's a good way to look at it. You know, that he could be that conduit, and Matt Boyd seems to be fulfilling that role at the major league level. So
yeah.
Between the two, in terms of pitching, I feel pretty good about the organization at this point. It's, you know, it's the question of where are we going to find the bats, and are we going to make any kind of an effort to win while we have all this pitching, or are we going to have to trade, you know, Boyd, Norris, Fulmer, Turnbull to get enough, you know, and then maybe you don't have enough pitching, you know, it's, we're in a weird spot where it's not lining up particularly well, at this point, but yeah, just to have all those young guns on the horizon pitching wise makes me feel a lot better about the season. We should see some of these guys later on, I would assume.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it's something where like, I mean, I'm personally very, very high on CJ Krohn this year. And, you know, maybe it's something where, you know, he performs how I think he should be performing this year, and they move him for some future hitting value.
Yeah, it's not impossible. I think we've also kind of grown a little bit embittered about the we're going to sign this guy to a 1-year deal and flip him idea, because sure. It just doesn't, you know, it's just a tough time. It's a tougher time to trade and hope to get back a real hitter. Teams are clinging to those guys, you know, with a death grip. Like, I've had, this is just fans, of course, but, you know, like Angels fans I've been, you know, talking to for a while, like, hey, you know, Brandon Marsh and another piece, and you guys could have Matt Boyd. And everybody's like, no, there's no way, we never trade Brandon Marsh. And it's just like, well, what are you going to do? Are you guys going to have five outfielders over there and nobody to pitch? You know, I mean, Joe Adell, you got, you know, Mike Trout, obviously, for God's sakes. And then you got Justin Upton in left. You got Fletcher, you know. You guys can spare
Ryan Goodwin, like, yeah,
yeah. That's yeah, yeah. If we could combine those two teams, we'd have a juggernaut. But
wouldn't that be great? If like that would be awesome. We should start doing that a little bit more, combining two like subpar teams and just turning them in. Because who else is going to beat the Dodgers?
Yeah,
we need like some sort of Voltron team to take that team on.
Yeah, you know, like some of these ideas about like relegating, like, you know, the worst team in each, you know, in each division, and then, you know, just let everybody else like kind of vulture them for its season, and then they have to come back together.
Yeah. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. It could be fun, you know. what do you think about Joe Jimenez this year? He's another one, you know, who, you know, I know there's been interest from the Rays. Like, there have been a couple teams who have inquired on Joe Jimenez that scared me, because I expected Joe Jimenez to get traded to one of those two teams and, you know, suddenly have like a perfectly efficient riding four seamer and a tighter slider and just absolutely dominate in a way that we haven't quite been able to get him to do yet.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear you. I mean, so just from, you know, this is kind of the reason why I asked you about your opinions about the organization and if you felt that they were stubborn, because I just did this big presentation at First Pitch Florida, this Baseball HQ event about relievers and about closers and about how, in my opinion, we're still kind of drafting them incorrectly. And I got a bunch of data for the past 12 years from all these teams to see how they have historically been treating the closer position, because obviously, you know, they're being utilized differently. Saves are being more distributed. Last year, I think about 204 different relievers got at least one save by organization, which was far and away a high.
Oh, yeah.
Like a league high. And some people might look at that. It's actually, I think it's like 194 individual relievers, but I double counted some because I feel like when guys like Melanson get traded to a different team and they get saves for both of them, I think it's important to kind of double count them. But either way, it's important to know that that's on the rise. But the Tigers are not really with that trend. I mean, they seem to be at least for the past 12 years, an organization that really likes to stick with their guy. I mean, I was really surprised last year after they traded Green. Jimenez got all of those saves.
Yeah.
All of them. I mean, granted, I don't think it was more than like 10 or 12, but like still, usually when that happens, they'll kind of maybe do a little bit of a committee or maybe give some opportunities to some other guys. And maybe it was just something where they didn't really believe in like Buck Farmer to be able to come in and get some saves. But from a solely fantasy perspective, I think while guys are going to be drafting people like Nick Anderson or Gallegos over on the Cardinals, they're going to have their saves split up, whereas Joe Jimenez should theoretically, if he doesn't get moved, get a bulk of them, because that four-seamer, I mean, it's a very good four-seamer. I think it is in the 90th percentile and 95th percentile in spin rate. He's up there with his velocity. It's a really great pitch, so I'm excited to see what he can do.
Yep, and he's another one, you know, gets really good extension to the plate, and if he can get a hand, I really think what happened to him last year is if you look at his numbers, the slider graded really well, but he didn't use it very much, and that was largely because he just didn't have command of it a lot of the time. So,
sure,
that might be the next step for him. Yeah, maybe I guess I like the term traditional for the Tigers better than stubborn, because they have been. You know, there's been an attempt, like they certainly recognize that they were behind the times and are trying to make those strides. And it feels more and more like some of the players are taking that role themselves and, you know, and going to work outside, you know, the organization, bringing information back. But in terms of like usage specifically, the Tigers are, yeah, rock solid traditional. I mean, this is the team that named Bruce Rondon as their, you know, their closer, you know, of the future. When he was still, I think, in like double A, you know, like
sure.
You guys, you didn't need to say that, you know, and they are like that. They want a closer. They want their dedicated, you know, eighth inning guy. And even just seeing, you know, the piggyback starts with Norris and Verhagen last year, you know, that kind of blew a lot of the fan base's mind, and everybody kind of felt like, oh, here we go. You know, they're really going to start innovating in their usage and all that. But really, that was just because Daniel Norris, you know, had only thrown, I think, like 90 innings in 2018, and they didn't want to push his innings total too far. And so he actually went in and wrote a letter to Ron Gardenhire begging him, you know, to let him keep starting. And that was kind of the compromise. It's like, you can go three innings.
Are you serious? I did not. He wrote a letter to him?
Yeah, a handwritten letter. This is Daniel Norris, of course. You know, it was probably, you know, scratched with, you know, some kind of stub of a golf pencil he found in a swamp, you know. Something along those lines. He might have chipped it out of something, for all I know. Like, wood carved it.
That's amazing. Yeah, that is amazing.
Yeah, there it is. So, you know, that's the way it goes over here. Sometimes we don't see a whole lot of interesting usage, and it's too bad, especially I think going into this year, because there are a couple, like, you know, Jordan Zimmermann, like, cannot, you know, if Jordan Zimmermann gets you through the order one time, you should be happy with that and just move on. You know, he's a perfect candidate to have, you know, a hard throwing lefty or, you know, someone else kind of lead off, you know, and get, you know, most of the way through the order, let Jordan Zimmermann face the final couple guys in the order and then turn it over and go one time or maybe two times if he's on that day. But yeah, they just don't show a whole lot of, you know, interest in doing that. And maybe that'll change, you know, maybe the extra spot on the roster allows them, you know, to maybe experiment a little bit more with that sort of thing, especially because they, you know, they do have a lot of depth at AAA. Like, the Toledo Mudhens pitching staff is probably going to be better than the Tigers pitching staff this year. Won't surprise me a bit if it is.
Yeah. I hear you. I mean, I feel for you. I'll say that. I very much feel for you guys.
You know, we had a good run. What are you going to do?
Yeah, that's true. At least you had a good run.
Yeah, you guys. At least you had a good run. You guys had a decent run. There were like a couple years that you guys were in there in Baltimore, and surprisingly so. Like, I always looked at those Baltimore teams and just thought, like, nah, there's no way. But they just had, it was just such a genius for putting together a bullpen over there. And obviously, you know, I'm a fan of Buck Showalter. So, but that's kind of where I first like started really thinking about like the way you would use pitchers, you know, and stagger different types of stuff. And arm angle and all that, so that you're giving people all these different looks. I mean, it helps to have, you know, Darren O'Day and Zach Britton and, you know, all these guys.
Sure.
But yeah, that was a pretty interesting period. And I would love to have Sig Madahl, you know, kind of running the show here. So I have some hope for you guys over there as well.
Yeah, I agree. It's the most hope I've had in a while. I'm going to be wholly discouraged if Dylan Bundy, you know, explodes when he is with the Angels. It's going to be really tough for me to see, especially considering that it's the new organization that moved him.
Yeah.
So, but I'm hoping. The fact that we're even a top 15 farm team is amazing. That's great.
Yeah.
All about.
That was pretty fast, you know, pretty fast turnaround. And you guys didn't really have too many huge pieces to trade. So, pretty good in that regard. That's the big problem with the Tigers rebuild is that they really, you know, we'll see how things play out. But right now they didn't get a whole lot back for Justin Verlander and they got nothing for JD Martinez. And that's a bad way to start a rebuild.
Oh, God. I know there's one thing I wanted to bring up about Jimenez, because I know you wanted to talk about some of the other younger arms, but I was looking at you kind of got me curious about his put away rate, how efficient he was at putting away guys. And it's top 40. I mean, he's right there near, and that's over all relievers, not just closers. So that's great. I mean, he's right next to Ozuna. He's better than Leclerc. There's a lot of like really good names that he's better than. He's better than Green, better than Melanson, which kind of makes sense. Not really a strikeout guy. So I think he does have some good stuff.
Oh, that's pretty interesting. Yeah. Yeah. I hadn't looked that up. Yeah, actually, do you want to just describe for a second what put away percentage is? Just because I think it's, you know, it's fairly new to think about it that way, although it makes perfect sense. So, yeah.
Yeah, sure, totally. The put away rate was a metric created by, I couldn't find out who, I like Googled forever, but it was someone over it. I think it was, what was it? It wasn't Baseball Reference, but it was something like that. Either way, it is a metric that is essentially looking at how well a guy puts away a particular hitter. The formula for it is strikeout with pitch type over two strike pitches with that pitch type. And that's very convoluted. So let me see if I can break it down a little bit easier. So let's say like it's the first at bat of the year and Gerrit Cole is throwing against Hanser Alberto. If he throws a fastball, then Alberto in a two strike count. It's a two strike count. Cole throws a fastball. Alberto fouls it off. He throws another one. It's a ball. And then he throws a third fastball and gets the strikeout. So Cole's K percentage on the fastball is 100%, right? It's the first at bat of the year. He got one strikeout with that fastball, but the put away rate would actually be 33% because he threw 3 2 strike fastballs, only one of which resulted in a strikeout. So it's really kind of an efficiency rating, right? K percentage doesn't necessarily tell you the entire story. Put away rate lets you know how efficient a guy is being with a pitch. Chris Paddock is a great example of a guy who kind of struggles with put away rate because he really only has two pitches so far. He's got the fastball and the changeup. He really needs that curveball to come ahead to help get, you know, guys out. With relievers, it's a little bit different because obviously they're usually only dealing with one or two pitches. So when I see Joe Jimenez has a high put-away rate, that's encouraging to me. That's good to know.
Yeah, yeah. You just keep an eye out. If Joe's getting ahead of people, he should be fine. Yeah, it's neat, you know, how many different kind of, you know, little granular ways we can break a pitcher down that way and look at them. Like looking at, you know, you can look at swinging strikes. You can also look at, you mentioned or you retweeted something the other day about frame, like, or what was it, freeze rate, I think it is, which is like, it seemed to me, or at least if it isn't, this is another interesting way to look at it, is like how many pitches that start out of the zone and come in and don't get a swing against them, you know, like knowing that is another interesting kind of element you could add into the mix.
There's truly so much, and I mean, like, that's kind of what we're trying to do over at Pitcherless too, is just like, what do they mean? and B, how do you use them? And C, like, how do you weight them, right? Because, I mean, like, the thing that I'm always kind of getting on people about is, like, I'm not really, WAR is fantastic, but I don't like it because it's just a catch-all fun metric, right? And that, to me, is the kind of antithesis of the issues I have with metrics. It's like, no, these guys are puzzle pieces, and every single, you know, we want to be looking at as many different things as we can.
Yeah, because if a guy changes one thing, it can affect everything, like everything that he's got, like all the way all of his pitches play, everything. So
totally.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's just a question out there, you know, for people who are baseball fans and interested, like how deep do you want to go? You know, I've still got, you know, people in my family who I, you know, I have to harp on the three true outcomes, you know, about like start there with everybody, start there with all hitters, start there with all pitchers, you know, and then we'll start looking at, you know, the contact and quality of contact and all that other stuff, you know, but just, you know, as a baseline, just give me the three true outcomes at least.
I do feel too, I have to say, I would be remiss if I can't believe it took me this long to bring it up. I was fortunate fortunate enough to go to Comerica for two games about a year ago. And that stadium, I think, is awesome. I think it's really awesome. And the fans are really like amazing. Like I sat with, this was like in the middle of the summer, like both of the teams were really good and they were just really excited to be there. And you could just tell they really loved Tigers baseball. And like, this is almost like sacrilege to say for an Orioles fan, but in many ways, I actually enjoyed Comerica more than Oriole Park at Camden Yards.
Oh, that's interesting. Cause yeah, I mean, everybody loves Camden Yards. Like it's just such a cool park. But yeah, Detroit has its thing where in the summertime it is sort of like the stadium there is kind of the hub, you know, there's pretty much everything that goes on downtown is within, a couple blocks, generally speaking. So yeah, you know, they actually do get a pretty good turnout down there, even considering how bad, we have the worst record over the last 5 years combined of any team in baseball, which is hard to reconcile. But yeah, people will still come out, it's a place that people like to hang out in the summertime. And yeah, and Detroit is a quirky, interesting city with a lot of parts to it. So yeah, you'll definitely see some characters there as well.
And the largest roads I've ever seen in my life. Like those roads were, I've never been in a city where they were like, yeah, we added bike lanes and it was no problem. Yeah. Like no one cared.
Yeah, we added the trolley and people didn't even notice, that it was going.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, we do all that. And at the same time, we cannot actually fix the roads that we have. I don't know. It's a conundrum, the most potholed roads, on planet Earth. But yeah, we got plenty of them, man. Yeah, options. Oh, Lord. I've never been to Baltimore. I would love to go. I think my podcast partner, Ashley, is going to Camden Yards sometime this summer. Yeah, check it out.
Listen, it's amazing. It's gorgeous. The city is what it is, but it's getting better. The stadium is gorgeous. It's extremely intimate. It's very, very intimate. So I think she'll dig it.
Yeah, right on. Yeah, I mean, my last good memories there are really like, J.D. Martinez or Nick Cassianos hitting a home run to right in the 2014 ALDS, Mm-hmm. But just that sense of like everyone being on the concourse back there and really kind of looking right on top of the field is pretty cool.
Yeah.
I guess if there's one complaint I have about Comerica, it's that now that we have nets, it would be nice that I would just like to see the stadium like pressed back up closer to the field a little bit. I still like some foul territory. I like it to be a little fair in terms of, pop outs for the pitchers. But yeah, it just feels so much more laid back. And especially growing up, going to Tiger Stadium in the 80s, Tiger Stadium, it felt like, like the game was happening underneath your feet and you couldn't even see some of it. You were right on it. So,
yeah.
Yeah. And, it's all part of that kind of more spread out prairie style of stadium that went on in the 90s, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear you.
But I like it. Yeah. I'm still pretty good with it. Yeah. I mean, in general, just to kind of turn to this before we get into the top prospect guys real quick. What do you think about the fact that the Tigers rebuild is so pitching centric? Do you think that can work? I mean, I've kind of argued that maybe we are, maybe not by design, but kind of bucking the trend here and maybe getting better pieces by being, heavily pitching focused as opposed to trying to compete for the hitters. But I don't know. What is your what's your perspective on that?
No, I mean, I'm biased, but I like that. I like seeing the kind of the young arms, and I like seeing the fact that they're having success drafting too. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's kind of rare. I mean, especially coming from my perspective, it's rare to have them have so much success drafting and then turning these guys into something viable. You know what I mean? They've made legitimate changes, it seems, with Mize and with Manning in terms of both of their commands, that they're turning into these front end guys, which I think is really exciting. And I also enjoy the fact that they're kind of zigging while they're zagging. By the time they're competing in the Tigers overall in, let's say, 3 or 4 years, maybe that's a little optimistic, but let's say Mize and Manning come up for a full year next year or a year after that, by the time they're competing, the league is probably going to be different. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's going to be operating in a different way. We've been baseball fans long enough to know that there was a time before the launch angle revolution. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And if people think that this is going to be something that's still happening in 7 years, then there's a misunderstanding of what game theory is. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Other pitches are going to come into play. So the fact that they have these kind of exciting, explosive arms who might have struggled a little bit today, sure, but overall are really fantastic to watch, and they're zigging while the league is zagging, I think is a very interesting way to approach it. And I also still believe that you can still go out and buy a good hitter. You know what I mean?
And I've always, I mean, so I guess I feel like
I appreciate it.
Oh yeah. And if you're going to go out and spend your free agent dollars, like it just has always struck me that it's safer to buy position players. Like if you're going to spend on someone, you know, we see what Chris Sale's, you know, going through over in Boston and, you know, yeah, they won a World Series. So whatever. But yeah, it's just risky to put that kind of cash down on pitchers. And, boy, the Yankees better hope Garrett Cole is real damn good this year. Cause
yeah,
if he isn't,
totally.
Yeah, they're really shit out of luck with Severino out again.
Yeah, without a doubt. And then Paxton, it's a nightmare over there. I think the one thing, the one asterisk I'll put next to that is like the organization needs to continue to grow. You know what I mean? If they're an organization that's going to build these pitchers who I really do believe in and really do believe that they're going to have success, they can't be the team that's letting, you know, JD Martinez go. And obviously that was a different set of circumstances, but they also can't be the team, not to keep bringing it back to the Orioles, but that signs a Chris Davis. You know what I mean? They need to be forward thinking with how they're going to spend that money on hitters to really maximize their game plan.
Yeah, I agree. And it, you know, there's also the sense too, like it's hard for, you know, we had Justin Verlander, we had Max Scherzer, and it's still hard for those guys to be the face of the franchise because you're pitching every 5 days. It still feels like to have a real winner, you have to have that core group of guys who come up together. You know, it's just really hard to buy a whole bunch of free agents and get the chemistry right enough to smash them all together and figure you've got this juggernaut. So yeah, it does feel like they've got to find a way to get those couple guys. Like Riley Green obviously looks like one of those guys, but he's a few years away. Maybe Spencer Torkelson, Austin Martin, when we pick first this year. They've got a few guys, but there isn't much beyond that. And that's where we're going to be hurting for a while, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it goes. All right. Let's just talk real quick about Casey. You know, we saw Casey Mize today. What do you think about Casey Mize in general?
I think overall, like if you told me, hey, I'm getting 160 out of Mize and I'm getting 160 out of Manning, I would go with Mize. I think he really has actually the better stuff, the fuller arsenal as well. It's just the health that's obviously going to be pretty scary. I was super excited to be able to watch him on TV today. I think I was the only one who was like, forget about Cole. Like, you guys obviously were. I'm sure you guys felt the exact same way. His fastball has that really nice arm side run to it, sort of lacking command in this particular start. Obviously, the velo's there for him. He's sitting comfortably in the mid-90s. The slider is really nice. You can sort of mix speeds with it a little bit. And then, of course, there's that splitter, which she considers to be his whiff pitch. We get a lot of jokes over at PitcherList about our kind of like hatred of splitters. But when they're utilized the way that he utilizes them, which is kind of a whiff getting third pitch, then it's something we're much more interested in. We usually just don't like the volatility with the grip. But yeah, there was, as the start progressed, there was like, okay, maybe he's losing a little bit. But overall, like the stuff is there, man. The stuff is very much there.
Yeah, it's really good. And yeah, that splitter is one of the best out there, I'd say, already. I know it gets 70 grades, you know, all over the place, and that makes sense. The fastball command is usually good. Like, command in general is kind of what stands out to everyone about Casey Mize. He just generally has looked really composed when he's been healthy, you know, throws a ton of strikes, can spot it to, you know, either side of the plate, can go upstairs on you, has all those things going. I guess my only question about him, other than the health issues, which are present, is just how well the fastball play against major league hitters, because he does have the run, he's got some velocity, but it can also be a little bit flat. You know, it can have a little bit of that flat two-seam run on it, and you know, he shows the ball a little bit early, doesn't get great extension down the mound. There are some things like that, but there's just so much stuff there I don't know if I really ever look at him as like a guy who could be a 200 inning, you know, ace, but I would love to see the Tigers kind of protect him from the beginning and use him like a five inning starter. Like, we just want you to throw 90 pitches, you know, every time out, dominate these guys, and we'll go to the bullpen after that. But yeah, this isn't the organization to do that, I'm afraid.
Yeah, you're right. And that is kind of sad, because I do like that approach. You know, just let him build up confidence. You know what I mean? You don't want him to be like a guy like Giolito, who when he comes up just gets shelled and then looks lost for a year or two. You know what I mean? And I don't think Mize is like that. I think he's got a better makeup than that. But you're right. It would be interesting to see him utilize like that. And we're probably, I mean, in my opinion, and you obviously know more about the Tigers than I do, but I don't think we'll probably see him until August, you know?
Yeah, I think so, too. you never know. Obviously, it's a pitching staff. We saw a whole, you know, litany of injuries take a bunch of guys out right in the, at the beginning of the season last year. And maybe if something like that happens, you end up having to use one of them as a spot starter. But yeah, I would assume the Tigers really don't want to see any of those guys until very late in the season. Yeah, and then, yeah, Manning is sort of the one who's a little bit more still like the raw, like, my God, what an athlete, you know, type of guy. And he's another one who, you know, was really raw when they drafted him. And that's the pick that maybe could have gone the most wrong. You know, I think of like Riley Pint was drafted that same year, you know, a couple spots ahead of him. You know, they took a risk on a guy who was more of a basketball player and really needed like a complete mechanical overhaul in 2017 in his first full season. And then ever since then, the aptitude has just been incredible, and he just seems to keep making huge leaps and bounds. And I've had him number one on my list ever since we drafted him, and I didn't ever turn that over to Casey Mize. And I'm still kind of hanging in there that way, because I still think, you know, Manning just turned 22. I think we're going to see the changeup take a step forward this year, and I'm very interested to see the slider, because I've always kind of felt like there's going to be a cutter or a slider coming. He used to kind of... You know, he would kind of cross step occasionally, and his four seamer would cut, and it was always accidental. I talked to him one time about it, and he was like, "No, I'm not trying to do that." So it always seemed like he had that, you know, that ability to pull out a harder breaking ball. So yeah, I'm gonna be interested to see how that goes. But he is the one that seems like a little bit further away, especially after watching Tarik Skubal this spring, who's just been ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm sure we'll get to him in a second, but you're right about Manning too. I mean, you have to be impressed. When I looked at his Fangraphs page for the first time and I saw the steady decrease in walk rate ever since 2017 at virtually every level. Now, granted, some of that was, under 20 innings. But then to go from a guy who in his debut was kind of like, oh, a 11-12 walk percentage guy down to like a 7 in 133 innings last year. It was like, wow, he's legitimately making these fantastic strides. And I mean, today... It was like that first at bat to Gary Sanchez. I was like, "Let's go!" Like, yeah. Here we go, man. That 97 mile an hour fastball, like, which just looked so effortless for him. Three pitches, that strikeout, and then I think he kind of got rattled by that Higashioka home run, and everything after that was like a little bit tense. Yeah. But yeah, that beginning there was enough for me to be like, "Okay, there's plenty there for this kid."
Yep. And yeah, we've always kind of, you know, he just keeps filling out too. You know, he puts on like a little bit of good muscle every year, you know, and I kind of figure at the end, he's going to be built a lot like Noah Syndergaard. Maybe not quite as like thick, but you know, similar sized guy. And, you know, you saw him hit, I don't know, we can always kind of question, you know, the radar gun or whatever. I don't even know if there is a radar gun at this point. I thought they were all using TrackMan, but he did hit 100 on the gun today, which kind of set everyone abuzz. But yeah, when you watch how easily he throws, you know, 96, 97, the Tigers aren't a team that is emphasizing, you know, throwing your max velocity very often. And I think he just, you know, pitches within himself, but I'm pretty positive there's triple digits in there. And that'll start to come along as he gets more refined. So yeah, there's a lot to like. He's like that bet on the athlete guy, you know, like to see a guy with that big of a stride, that tall, that skinny, and still develop his command that way. Like, a lot of guys wouldn't be able to do that. You'd probably have to cut the stride down. You know, you'd have to, you know, make a lot more adjustments than he's had to refine his command and have it come along as well as it has.
And then go on.
Oh, no, go for it, because I'm going to go on to Skubal after this.
No, I was just going to say he's exciting to watch, and so is Skubal, really.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Tarik Skubal, you know, when we drafted him, I was like, oh, that's cool. Looks like, you know, could be a really interesting lefty reliever. You know, throws could top out 97. Oh, that's cool. And then, you know, he was a reliever for a couple of months after we drafted him. And then, yeah, it came out last year and it was just like, I don't know where this guy came from. You know, it's like Sandy Koufax dropped in our lap or something. Yeah. Leg kick, you know, like the power curve, the, you know, lightning fastball with all the ride on it, kind of that invisible fastball where he's throwing across his body from a high arm slot. And it's just super hard to pick up on for people. Yeah.
And I think that's kind of what makes him so exciting and what kind of picks up what used to be kind of, I don't want to say subpar, but breaking stuff that he wasn't really known for. You know what I mean? It seemed like he was just like, oh, that fastball is electric. That fastball is electric. And then those kind of wonky mechanics came in with the arm slot. And we were like, oh, okay, well, maybe that'll help him a little bit. And then I was kind of mulling back and forth. you know, all right, well, is this, you know, not to bring it back to Rondon, the closer of the future for the Tigers, you know what I mean? And then I saw that breaking ball K to Michael Chavis on Monday. And, you know, you hear how excited the announcers got about that. And I think it was like one of his curveballs that was just kind of like down into the knees there. So if he can keep making those, like, listen, if a guy has a foundation that's an elite fastball, that's what I prefer over all things. You know what I mean? I really think you can continue to fine tune the breaking stuff and help him reach another level. The kid is 23 years old.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's got a year or two to figure out how to make that changeup or that breaker a little bit more consistent and get more whiffs with it. And in the meantime, he's just relying on a fantastic heater.
Yep. And yeah, and pretty good command. You know, he's got kind of an elaborate delivery that you wouldn't necessarily expect him to spot the fastball as well as he does. But yeah, watching him last year, you know, he'd occasionally be wild and it wouldn't matter because he's just, you know, just blowing people away. But yeah, more often than not, he's able to kind of locate it where he wants to, or at least, you know, roughly. So yeah, I don't know. It's a pretty impressive group of three arms there. I'm not sure if anybody in baseball has a better group, although, you know, you could argue if you're the Padres, you got Mackenzie Gore and Luis Patino, but yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm actually a little bit more excited for these guys, to be honest.
I am too, although I do love me some Mackenzie Gore. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and I'm sure you do as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, I mean, that's where we're at. You know, we're gonna see what these guys can do this year and how the Tigers bring them along. To kind of move on to just a little bit of discussion, like, do you have any favorites? Any sleeper picks for Cy Young races that you want to drop on us?
Oh man! Aside from Boyd, let's see.
I went with Luis Castillo last year in the NL, and you know, he was good. Didn't work out though.
That's not bad. I think if I'm going to do a sleeper pick, maybe it'll be Darvish. You know what I mean? That's second half was super legit. He made that change to some of his mechanics. He tweaked something with his pitches and changed his utilization a little bit. I think he was a little more cutter heavy last year. And he put it all together. And I hate to rely too much on narrative, although, you know, some of the Nick jokingly calls me Alex Think Fast because I like to talk about the mental game a little bit. But like, I really think the fact that all this kind of came to light with Houston might have been a good thing for him to just kind of like bury the hatchet, you know that he was not in the wrong in that World Series appearance where he got blown up and kind of heard about it for the entire offseason before signing with the Cubs and then had a rough start with them. To me, he could be turning a new chapter, and I've never been one to rely on him because of his volatility, but if that change that he made to his mechanics is legit, he's got the secondary stuff to finally put it all together. It could be a really fun year for him.
Yeah. Oh, I would love that. Yeah, I'm a really big fan. I always really loved his stuff. I mean, and you're right. I pay attention to him on Twitter, and you know, he's always been a really good follow on Twitter. And he did kind of get quiet for a year or two out there, and now all of a sudden you see him out there kind of joking about the Astro stuff, and it just feels like a cloud has lifted for him a little bit. And
totally,
all those sort of intangible things are so hard. You know, we've already talked about some of them. Like, do you look at Daniel Norris's, you know, core surgery and, you know, the drop in velocity and think like he's going to get it back? And, you know, does it mean anything that Boyd is a leader? You know, all those things I know can be mushy to people who are really into data, but I still think you're hurting yourself if you don't pay any attention to that stuff. You know, it's great to just crunch the data with none of that in mind, you know, make your conclusions there and then season with, you know, they're people. And the more I pay attention to the game and you know, and the way it's played and talked about by the players, the more you see, you know, that it's not as codified as it might seem behind, you know, from behind your TV screen, you know, that these guys are living it every day and all the same problems that affect us all at work and everything else all come up, you know, for them.
Yeah, I mean, I think it looked no further than Manning today, right? He gave up that home run. And, like, imagine you did something that terrible at your own job. Like, you know what I mean? You're worried about what your bosses are going to think. You can't just immediately forget about it. So I agree 100% with what you said.
Yeah, it's a trick. You know, another really interesting thing that just took me aback the other day was that, I don't know if you saw Sonny Gray and Trevor Bauer talking to CC Sabathia on that podcast.
Yes.
And
yes.
Talking about the fact that the Yankees didn't really have, you know, any of this data available to them under Larry Rothschild, which absolutely blew my mind. Couldn't believe that.
Yeah, it's, you know, that first of all, that was a fantastic podcast, but it's going to be an interesting year for the Yankees and to see what happened now that what's his name? Of course, it is Rothschild, right? There was the old pitching coach who's now gone over to San Diego, right?
Yeah, I think so. And then Matt Blake, I think it is the pitching coach.
Yeah. Yep. So it's going to be a very interesting year for them. There are, I mean, like you said earlier on, they're already getting tested because Jordan Montgomery went from starting in the minors to being their number four. And then, so it's going to be an interesting year for them. Unfortunately, they don't have many teams to throw against because they still have the Orioles and the Blue Jays who are going to be better, but it'll be an interesting year for them for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. You've got all the stuff that went on with Devy. Yeah. I don't know. I'm not sure. But all I can ever say to the Yankees is that, you know, you guys screwed up in 2017. If you just would have traded for Justin Verlander, you guys probably have at least one World Series already. But no, had to keep Gleyber Torres. Fine. Enjoy.
Just had to do it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, man. Alex, man, thanks a lot for coming on. It's been great talking to you. I could talk to you for days and weeks about pitching, I'm sure. So maybe we'll get a chance to do it again.
Yeah, man. Seriously, maybe we'll touch base over the course of the Tigers season when it's looking like Matt Boyd's finally going to win that Cy Young, huh?
Yep, we'll come on and we'll just gloat on your airwaves and, you know, have a great time.
No, but seriously, I appreciate you reaching out and thanks for having me. This was great.
Awesome. Yeah, everybody, please follow Alex Fast on Twitter and check out the pitcher list. You will thank us all later. Make that, you know, a regular stop along with Fangraphs and wherever else you go to get your baseball information, and you will live a happier, more fulfilled life as a baseball fan and fantasy baseball player. Alex, thanks a lot, man. You have a good night.
You appreciate it.